Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 14th. I'm Ray Graff. It's been a hot, rainy, at times stormy summer so far. Here to discuss these conditions and more is meteorologist Jason Goff. Jason, formerly of News Channel 13 at Albany, is in the studio to answer your weather questions. So if you have a question about clouds, the humidity, dew point's always a popular one, or any other weather topic, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but jot it down. Here's the number, 800-348-2551. We talk weather with meteorologist Jason Goff. Your calls are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Summer has brought its fair share of heat, rain, and strong storms to our region. It's made for an interesting season for many of us, including the meteorologists among us. And we are lucky enough to have a meteorologist in the studio today to answer your questions. Jason Goff is here. Jason, formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany, his forecasts have been broadcast on this radio station. Always great to have him on Vox Pop. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Well, Jason Goff, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Nice to see you. A little quieter than the last time I was here.
I was going to say, I don't think we can top the last time. The last time you were on, things were happening.
It was like a live weathercast, man. We had warnings coming in. We had all kinds of stuff going on and a pretty active weather pattern that we're in right now. But at least for us in the WAMC listening area, a little quieter. They had some big issues out in central and southern New York early this morning, a lot of flooding out that way.
And I think there are flood watches up still for a lot of eastern New York and yes, parts of Pennsylvania and such through tonight.
Yes, flash flood watches in effect basically for all of eastern New York. The Weather Service office in Albany has talked about maybe extending it into the Berkshires, but they have not as yet. So, yeah, flash flood watch in effect for basically everybody except up into the Adirondacks. So we've got some saturated ground, so it just can't hold a lot more water.
That's a bad thing at the time, but I guess a good thing for the water table.
Yeah, in the long run. You know, I mean, weather always just evens itself out anyway. So I think for the year, we're just over an inch above average because I was doing some statistics on my Facebook page the other day and just crunching some things. We had like 4.75 inches of rain in July, but almost all of it fell in 6 days. So it was like all or nothing. You know, yeah. It's typical summertime stuff.
Now, you're pretty active on the Facebook page now.
I have been. You know, I missed being kind of plugged into the weather, and yeah, I figured this is the best way to do it. So I've been doing that over the last couple of weeks and just posting all kinds of weather stuff, little, you know, scientific articles here and there, but mostly weather stuff. And if anybody has any specific weather questions for a party or if I'm, you know, hey, I'm going on vacation here or there, I have a tee time, I'm going to the track, whatever, you just hit me up and I'll answer it up. It's not hard to do.
Now, you're setting the bar pretty high. I mean, what if 500 people suddenly ask you, hey, listen, I'll be up at the track.
It's not a bad problem to have. So right, we'll see what happens. But Goff Jason is my page, so check it out.
And you spell Goff how?
G-O-U-G-H-J-A-S-O-N, all one word.
Right on Facebook.
That's it, yeah.
All right, man, let's get to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551. Leo on the thruway. Leo, how are you?
I am well, sir. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. You're on.
Thank you very much. So we just spent almost a week camping on Lake Saranac. And we were, our only form of transportation was canoe, as it usually is, because we're both. So I'm a little bit of a weather-obsessed fool in the summertime when I have to travel on the water across big, you know, lakes and stuff. So I'm always checking the weather. So the best weather source for me is NOAA, and then I check it daily, and I have my little routine. But the thing that really bothers me about them is that they are loath to provide information about trending barometer because, as you know, barometric pressure is a fantastic way to just give us a little bit of insight into the future of what's about to happen. And other countries I've noticed, I spent a lot of time in Canada and a little bit in the Netherlands, and their official weather site from the government has always provides that on the page that you look at immediately to find out what the weather is currently.
So you're talking about you're looking at you're wanting to see what a trend is in the pressure. Is that what you're saying?
All I want to know is if the barometer is falling or rising.
Well, here's what you can do. Now, when you go, like, for example, on any weather forecast office page, so for our area, you know, for the WAMC listening area, that's Albany, Burlington, Binghamton. If you go on any of those pages, you can look at the hourly observations, and it will list the pressure. So you can look over the last couple of hours to see if it's coming up or down. That'll give you a trend.
Actually, on the NOAA site, on all of their local weather pages, there is a place where you can actually click on to find out more weather information. And that's how you can actually see what you need to see with the barometric pressure, what it's doing hourly. But I just think it would just be super helpful to know, you know, temperature, humidity, precipitation, and trending barometer, what it's doing.
Okay.
All right. Well, sounds thanks, good, Leon. Man. Yeah, I mean, at least if you've got a spot where you can see it, that's important.
Exactly. And the barometric pressure, what's the lowest barometric pressure we've ever seen on the Earth?
Oh, geez, I don't know the answer to that, but it's been low. I mean, the lowest pressures that you'll ever have that have yet to be measured are going to be inside of a tornado. So good luck with all that.
Okay.
But it's something that I could just Google and look up, I'm sure. But it's, you know, you're talking about the lowest pressure is going to be generally in a big storm, a hurricane of some kind. And then conversely, the highest pressure will be, you know, a day in, for us here locally, let's say, a day in January where the high is 10. There's not a cloud in the sky, big snowpack. That's going to be your real high pressure.
And they measure that in millibars?
Millibars or millimeters of mercury. So you can see either one. So
and the low barometric pressure, here's how folk wisdom works, which I'm sure on day one in meteorology this was dispelled. This is how it was handed down to me from grandparents,
okay,
or grandmother. So the low pressure is when there are clouds and they act as a barrier for the weight of the air that is coming down.
No, sir.
Okay.
But
so explain then why we have low pressure.
So low pressure, right, we don't live in a vacuum. So there's always going to be air around. So when air is rising, that is generally speaking, you know, if you're feeding a storm, not always, but let's just for our purposes of explaining this on the radio, as you have air lifting up into the atmosphere to get your clouds and eventually to get storms if things are frisky enough. So you have lower pressure there because you just don't have that weight of the air on you. You have air coming in to fill that gap, if you will. So think about like a sea breeze, right? If you're on the, say the Florida coast and the wind is always blowing onshore during the day, that's because the water and the sand heat differently. The sand heats up a lot faster, so that air is going to rise, so you have air that's coming in off of the ocean to fill that gap, if you will. So that's how you get the tend to get lower pressure, as best as I can explain it on the radio.
But my grandmother may not have been exactly right about that, but lower pressure indicates the bad weather
potential
coming.
Yes, yeah. So you're going to have clouds generally on days with low pressure as opposed to days with high pressure. Now, you can also have storms in the mid-levels of the atmosphere, the upper level of the atmosphere, that can act kind of like a vacuum cleaner, if you will, and that'll suck the air up into the atmosphere. Then you also have low pressure at the surface. So there are a few different mechanisms for that, and in fact, the culprit for our weather today and for the nasty weather out in the Finger Lakes is an upper level storm, so the pressure out there is real, you know, was low, and they've had a lot of real heavy rain to deal with.
Jason Goff is our guest. It's weather today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing fine. Thank you.
I'm just curious whether or not you've got statistics for the month of July and whether or not we hit anything close to a record of average highs.
Officially in Albany, at the Albany Airport, is where all these measurements are taken and archived and things. Believe it or not, it was tied for 10th warmest July on record.
Hmm.
Now, you would think it would have been higher than that on the list, right?
No.
We broke a record that I mean, when you say broke a record, I mean, we blew that thing out of the water. The record number of consecutive 80-degree days was 29. We hit 44.
Wow.
That record was just broken a few days ago. Saturday, we didn't get out of the low 70s. So up through last Friday was our 44th consecutive 80-degree or higher day.
Yeah.
But we also managed to have some quote-unquote cooler nights, so that when you're talking about the warmest July, you're looking at the highs and lows. So you add up the highs and lows for each day divided by 62, and there's your average temperature for
divided by 62, why?
Because you have a high and low each day, 31 days. So that's how you come up with that. But it was still, I mean, it was nice and warm. We had, our average high temperature through that streak was 86 degrees.
Wowzers.
All
right.
Take it.
Merle, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we will be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest today. And let's see, who's been waiting longest? Let's go over to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Hi. Jason, I had the honor to be a graduate student at the SUNY at Albany, and I studied atmospheric electricity under Bernie Vonnegut.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a wonderful teacher and a wonderful person, and he was always extremely curious about everything. And I'm 66, and over the years I've noticed that the nature of the type of thunderstorm that we get in this part of upstate New York, I'm north of Albany, has gone from a distinct cumulus set of clouds, cumulonimbus clouds, that form a storm, and you can see it coming. And now we seem to be getting storms that almost appear as if they are being affected by upper air currents, like because they have some stratus effects, and it's not the anvil effect. It's more like the storm has been strung out. I mean, a good example is when we had, maybe a month and a half ago, we had a system come through where the thunderstorm had it was stretched out over, you could see the cloud like overhanging and then being pulled, and the lightning, we had a downdraft that tore down every tree in West Hebron. And it, so the nature of the thunderstorm, it's not that it's more violent, it's just that it's not a distinct storm. It seems to be like part of a larger system or a system of storms. Have you noticed anything along those lines? Or
I would say impossible to kind of qualify or quantify that, because, you know, there's really no way to measure it. Now, what you're talking about, like when you're talking about storms out in Oklahoma, Kansas, you know, those Mac Daddies that show up out there in April, and
they're very distinct
because, you know, they have the perfect setup out there, and so you can get cloud tops. The higher the cloud top is, the nastier the storm is going to be. So around here, we might see a 40, 45,000, maybe even 50. Out there, you're talking 60,000
really,
or higher. So in our case, it's a function perhaps of, you know, running into something just below the tropopause where you can get, you know, some currents that are coming from here, there, or wherever that'll blow the top of that off. But as far as being any kind of a trend, I have no way of knowing that, nor does anybody else. I mean, you could look at damage reports over the decades, you know, in a decade at a time, and I don't think that you would see much in the way of difference from the effects of the storm. But as far as the structure, that's a really good question, and one that I don't know anybody would have the capacity to answer.
All right, Mark, thank you for a great question. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. Valerie on the Northway. Valerie, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering why the local news forecasts don't really give us something more specific to the Adirondacks, since that's such a huge recreational part of New York State, and it's only a couple-hour drive from, you know, again, Albany, Schenectady, Troy, whatever. The weather is so different down here versus wanting to take that two-hour trip, and you get up there and you get out of your canoe and there's no sun whatsoever.
Right.
So I just wondered why no one's more specific than that.
Yeah, well, Jason.
Hey, you can't yell at me anymore because I'm not on the
That's
air
right,
anymore.
Man.
So what I can do is I can tell you what the deal is. By the way, Valerie, are you you're on the Northway heading up to the Adirondacks right now?
Actually, no, I'm headed in the opposite direction,
oh, okay.
But I will be up there for a week starting Saturday.
Okay.
Well, hit me up on my Facebook page, Golf Jason. I'll give you a forecast that goes for anybody that needs a forecast anywhere. But the short answer is that the way that newscasts are structured, TV weather guys and women have a very finite amount of time, and they have to get through their presentation. So to your point, you're right. In the summertime, especially when you have a lot of people that are either living in the Adirondacks for the summer or certainly going up there to visit, you would think that there would be more time spent. Why there is not, I don't know, other than to say that perhaps, and this is just speculation, I'm not saying that I know this, but you know, you might have a news director or manager say, hey, don't spend as much time up there because there aren't as many people up there as there are in the Capital District. So you want to try to hit the largest percentage of your audience that you can. Again, I'm just speculating.
In a limited
on that,
amount
but,
of time.
But yeah, that's the real weak link in the chain is that you have a real finite amount of time, and you know, producers work very hard to keep newscasts on time. So if weather people go over there a lot of time, it can wreak a little havoc on things.
Now, Valerie, I'm assuming you listen to Paul Cayano's forecast in the morning and at midday, right? He covers all that area.
True, but again, it just seems a little bit more vague.
Yeah. All right, you're
there and on.
We're losing you there, Valerie, but thank you. You made a good point. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll just, you know, like I said, I've enjoyed kind of keeping everybody up on my page because I'll let everybody, you know, whatever you need to know, I have plenty of time, so I'll be able to do it.
You're a free man now.
That's right.
You can say whatever you want.
That's right.
This is wonderful. Let's go over to Elizabeth in New Paltz. Elizabeth.
Hi. A few weeks ago, there was a terrible storm where there were tornado winds to the north of New Paltz and to the south of New Paltz, and trees were knocked down and everything. But in New Paltz, there was no rain, no wind, no anything. So it looked like the storm split up into two parts. So is that just that storms can split up, or did the cliff to our west have something to do with splitting up the storm? And does the cliff to our west protect us from more severe storms in New Paltz?
That is a good question. The answer to that about protection, absolutely not. I remember being in the Albany City Schools and being told that Albany could not get a tornado because it was in a valley, which is hogwash.
Ah.
Now, storms do split. That is, they certainly do that. And I hear sort of anecdotally on the street from people, they'll say, and you can fill in the location because I've heard it probably from 20 different locations. Every time a storm approaches, you know, area blank, the storm splits and we never get it.
Huh.
That's just not true. So on that particular day, Elizabeth, you lucked out for all intents and purposes. You know, on a bigger scale now, for example, on the lee side of a mountain range like the Rockies, that could keep you from getting as much rain, okay, for an effect called downsloping, compressional heating, that sort of thing. But around here, no, ma'am. It was just a function of luck that day that storm just split and spared you.
Okay.
Another thing, if you're looking at the radar to look for weather, can you pretty much trust that? I mean, we go kayaking on the Hudson River all the time, and sometimes we see a storm that looks like it's going to the north, and we're thinking, well, maybe we could chance it because we're south of that. Is that a bad thing to do?
Well, I mean, it's never – anytime you can hear thunder, you can be struck by lightning, so it's never a good idea to be out on the water in a case like that. You know, on
but if you don't hear thunder, you just see it on the map that it's going north. Once you see thunder, all bets are off.
Exactly. But if you're looking at a radar app, for example, on your phone, and I'm not getting paid to say this.
Right.
I have this on my phone and on my iPad. It's called RadarScope. It's $10, which, as apps go, is on the pricey side. It is worth every penny.
Oh,
it's
boy.
A fantastic app. You can zoom in as you know where you are, and it will give you everything you need to know.
Oh,
it's a great app. So anybody that's in outdoors, yeah. I would highly recommend that. I think it's the best one out there.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call, and I think we may have just activated another call. Who's on the line here? Is this Sam?
Hey, Sam.
Hi, Sam. How's it going?
Very simple, very brief question. What's the difference between climate and weather, and why is the understanding of that difference important?
Yes.
You seem very pleased about
that.
That is
a great question. This is a show about weather, and sometimes we get calls about climate.
Yeah.
Climate and weather, obviously very important things, both of them. Weather is, you want to think about that on a day-to-day, a week-to-week thing. Climate is an average over an extended period of time. In particular, the way that the National Weather Service offices look at climate data, that is average highs and lows for a month or a day, they do that over a 30-year period. So it drives me crazy when people say, we had a cold winter, so much for global warming and climate change. And I'm like, well, that's just one winter. That's
right.
That's a stupid
one
argument.
Data point.
Right. So exactly. It's one data point. So weather is sort of the nuts and bolts of the machine, which is the climate. Good question.
All right. Sam, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. This one came in via email from Joe in Guilderland. And Joe writes, I love the Northeast because of the climate, the change in seasons, and availability of fresh water. How do you think climate change will affect the annual rainfall in the Northeast? Will it become drier or more wet?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if you look at the global climate models and things, certain places are going to get drier and certain places are going to get wetter. The idea behind a wetter climate is that the warmer the air is, the more moisture it can hold.
Yeah.
So if you have a warming planet, it stands to reason that you're going to have, again, more moisture, which is going to equal more rain. But the problem is that there's a lot more to it than that, in that you're talking about global patterns.
Yeah.
And what goes up must come down. We had, a pretty cold, nasty March in Europe. It was quite mild. And we've seen the opposites of that, where other places get a ton of rain. You have wildfires in Indonesia and Australia.
Yeah.
So we're talking about things on a global scale. As far as what the effects will be for us, on the grand scheme of things, a postage stamp as compared to the rest of the world,
yeah,
size-wise, it's very difficult to tell.
All right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Jason Goff, our guest. We talk weather today. And Ryan in Warwick, you're next. Ryan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm always talking about weather with people. We're active gardeners and we're outside a lot. And I'll say things like, oh, it's been really hot, or it's been really dry, or it's been really wet. But it all seems to be like really anecdotal. And I was curious, what's the best way to start tracking this kind of stuff at home? Like setting up like a mini weather station or something, so I can say with some authority, oh, yeah, it's been a hot summer, or, whatever the case may be.
Well, that's a great question. You can basically do as much or as little as you want in that regard, and that goes for the amount of money that you spend as well. You can spend some good money on a weather station that,
yeah,
will download all the data to your computer. You can mount it and do all kinds of things, in the right spots on your house or on your property to measure all kinds of things, temperature, wind speed, pressure, dew point, the whole nine yards. Or in anything in between, you can have a thermometer that you just take your own measurements from, you know, like a school project. There are certain guidelines, if you will, to where you can place thermometers or rain gauges and things like that. You don't want any obstruction, obviously, with a rain gauge, so don't set it under a tree, for example. And the same thing with thermometers. You want to make sure that they are away from, like, black surfaces, dark surfaces, because, yeah, like, blacktop, for example, is going to hold heat. So thermometers, official measurements, are sitting over grass 6 feet off the ground in what kind of looks like a little birdhouse almost. It's painted white because white is the opposite of black in that it reflects a lot of the sun, and it actually sits in a little vented box.
Hmm.
So, you know, you don't have to go through those measures, but it, if you're going to stick a thermometer someplace, just make sure that it's not getting direct sun or that it's not over, you know, dark bodies or even concrete is going to radiate a lot of heat. So there are lots of different things that you can do to check that out, Ryan. And, you know, I would start just do a little search, and you'll see all kinds of different weather stations and pick which one you like.
All right, Ryan, thanks a lot. Do you have a good weather station at your house?
I never got one.
Really?
I never did. I've always just sort of relied on, I have, you know, rain gauge. I would measure snow. It's just something that I was always into on computers, so I never bothered to have one at my house, which is probably sacrilege for a true meteorologist not to have that. But
you can always lie and just say you have one.
Well,
I mean, that's always the
other
option.
Not my style, but I understand.
We put a thermometer out below the overhang on our back patio.
That's good.
Oh, it's so fun. It's great to watch. In fact, I think it was 4th of July. I was out grilling, and I could see that it was about 95, and I was out grilling and complaining to my wife about it. I said, look how hot it is. You're making me grill.
And it's not. Well, it's better than having the oven going inside, I suppose.
Not for me.
That's true.
Let's go over to Tom in Cooperstown. Tom, you're on.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey,
I
Tom.
I got two quick questions for you. Does all rain start as ice crystals in the upper atmosphere?
Nope.
And what causes puffy clouds to hold together instead of just dissipate?
Good question.
The old friendly cumulus.
The
is,
old friendly cumulus,
who
yeah.
Who said that? Howard Tupper. Somebody said that way back when
the
on TV.
The old friendly cumulus, yeah. Not all rain starts off as ice crystals. When you get into thunderstorms and things, the rain could start as ice or even snowflakes way up in the atmosphere. But on a day, especially in the summertime, you look at a sort of an imaginary line in the atmosphere, if you will. That's called the freezing line, where literally above it is the air is below freezing and below it it's not. And so on days where we have, you know, a high of 95 when Ray's out there grilling and the dew point is 75, generally don't see hail on days like that because the freezing line is so high up that we don't have to really worry about it. Now, last week we had hail up in Clifton Park. We had a couple of reports about 1.5 inches hail. That was a big, tall storm that allowed that hail to form. Again, hail and ice crystals, totally different processes, but I'm just trying to paint a picture there. So, but oftentimes, yes, it can start as frozen precipitation of some kind and then melts on its way down, but not always. And then the other question that you had about puffy cumulus, why do they dissipate? It just has to do with the ambient humidity around. So if you have enough moisture in the atmosphere that's not going to draw the water back out of those clouds, then those clouds are going to be allowed, if you will, to exist. Does that make sense?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Tom. We appreciate it. All right, take us through the basic types of clouds. I'm trying to remember from middle school, cirrus, right?
Cirrus, those are the real high ones, yep.
The stratocumulus.
Then you have, well, that's a little more specific, Ray. You're going over my skis already.
All right.
So well, you have three classifications, really. You have cumulus, stratus, and cirrus.
Right.
And then you said stratocumulus.
Right.
That's pretty good. A lot of times we'll see stratocumulus clouds on the backside of a cold front that will come through, where it might be one of those days where it starts off real sunny, but there's cold air in the atmosphere, so you get this kind of deck and it gets overcast. That's stratocumulus. So I'm impressed, man. That's pretty good.
What about lenticular clouds? Now, I see them every now and then you'll see on the news. People in South America were terrified by the lenticular clouds. What's up with those?
Those are really sort of their own little entity. Once in a while, you'll see a picture like from Mount Washington, Mount Marcy. I've seen a picture, but most of the time you'll see them out over the much higher peaks, and they act, the mountains really kind of act as a way, because look, air is going to get up into the atmosphere in a couple of different ways. Either something is going to push it up like a cold front, it's going to get drawn up for an upper level storm, or it's going to run into something like a mountain and rise.
Right.
And so when it does that, and then you have wind currents that are doing different things, that's what gives it that sort of flying saucer shape. They're pretty wild-looking things, for sure.
Very cool. All right, Jason Goff is our guest. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back for the home stretch. Okay, thank you,
Jimmy.
Zach. A little Jimi Hendrix for you here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number, and Jason Goff is our guest. Before we get back to the phones here, Jason, a couple of emails here. This one is from Joe B., if you want to score at home.
Joe B., all right.
We here in Pittsfield have often heard the terms rain shadow and snow shadow used to explain the odd circumstance of westerly storms, usually from the southern Adirondacks, northern Catskills, and eastern Mohawk Valley, passing into the central Berkshires and failing to drop as much precipitation on us as they had been dumping along their paths in New York. Is there really such a meteorological shadowing effect in play here?
Yes.
If so, kindly explain how it works.
Okay. So it is, first of all, one of the major forecasting headaches of all time.
Why?
In this area, because it's nearly impossible to forecast too far in advance. On this side of Pittsfield and the Berkshires, that is to the west, you've seen that it doesn't happen very often, but it can be one of those deals where they'll get 18 inches of snow or 16 inches of snow in places like Austerlitz, Chatham, Lenox, and then in Albany it's like 3.
Yeah.
And in Troy it might be like 6. It is a disaster to try to forecast it. So it's always on forecasters' minds. So in essence, what happens is, like, kind of what we were talking before about New Paltz, where when you have air that flows over a mountain range, even something as relatively small as the Berkshires, you can get, what happens to that air is it gets heated, compressional heating.
Right.
So if you put air in a bicycle tire, that air is going to heat up.
Okay.
When you release it, it cools. So as you have that air coming down, the pressure on it becomes greater, it gets compressed, and it holds more moisture, which means that's less moisture to fall out of it as snow or rain.
Okay.
And that cuts down greatly on your precipitation totals, be it rain or snow.
All right. This one came from Dick in Holland Patent. Why does variation in heat and humidity affect the quality of radio reception? I live about 8 miles from the WAMC transmitter in Remsen. In the fall, winter, and spring, reception is fine. In the summer, as the temperature gets above 80 and the humidity is high, static increases, signals from adjacent stations leak over, and reception deteriorates. Yesterday, it was hot, humidity was extremely high, towering cumulonimbus clouds threatened all over, and WAMC was unreceivable. I had to resort to the computer. How can we explain these things?
That is a really good question, and I wish that I had a more succinct answer.
It's isotropic ducting, right?
Well, yes, and so basically when you're talking about even like submarines, right, air is a fluid like water is. So even submarines, you know, when they're doing their sonar, it's a sort of the same kind of an idea that you're thinking about. It's going to transmit better in that colder, denser water.
Yeah.
In the atmosphere is pretty much the same thing. So you have lighter air. There's less conduits, if you will, for those signals to travel through, and so it's going to disperse. Now that seems a little extreme if he's not that far from there, but I'm not an expert in that. This would be a much better question for like an engineer of a radio.
Well, I know that in the summertime you'll get this ducting effect where if you're watching, in the old days when we had TVs that had antennas on them,
mm-hmm.
every now and then here in Albany you'd suddenly see Channel 8 from Hartford or Utica coming in clear as can be, and it's just the way the ducting works.
That's it. And I, when AM radio was big, I would hear stories about people at night being able in Albany, they would get an AM station from like Cleveland.
Right. Now that's a different thing at play.
Okay.
That's a longer wavelength, but VHF, UHF, where we are, we're in VHF here on FM. Yeah. But at night you can, if the conditions are right, you can hear some crazy stuff.
That is something else.
Driving into work one morning here at 3 a.m., listening to stations from Sweden on my car radio.
Wow.
Yeah, it happens in the middle of winter.
That's over my skis, man. I don't know
all
much
right.
of anything about
we gotta
that
get back
stuff.
To the phones. Last question here via email. This is from Jonathan in East Chatham. When there is a heavy dew, why does the moisture seem to collect solely on horizontal surfaces?
On horizontal, well, just because it's not going to be able to drip off onto something else. And it's also, that's the obvious sort of gravity answer. But the other piece is that colder air is denser than warmer air, so it's going to settle into any low spot. And that might be a field, it might be a little bowl somewhere or whatever. And so what happens is that colder air is going to have that air over it condense, and it's just going to sit there until the sun cooks it up.
All right, before any ham radio operators call in, it's tropospheric ducting. It's not isotropic ducting.
Okay.
Isotropic is a theoretical antenna.
Oh, man, those ham radio operators.
Yeah,
they'll
complain.
They know their stuff.
You made a mistake, man. Let's go to Sally in Schuylerville. Sally, you're on.
Hi. I kind of have two questions. They both should be short. We live in Schuylerville, and lots of times if there's threatening weather and we're looking at radar and it appears to be coming east, when it gets over Saratoga, it often disperses and we never see it. So I was wondering if there's any reason why that would happen.
No, there is no reason. I think a lot of times people it's so funny, like weather and psychology and people's perceptions of things that, I'll bet you, Sally, if you were to take 20 storms that were coming from Saratoga over your way, just, basically due east on 29, right? I mean, it's not far.
Right.
You're not, out of those 20 times, you're not going to have less than 5 where that happens to you. It's just, it's not, it has nothing to do with anything. It just kind of, it's what people perceive.
Mm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
and
Sally.
My other question.
Go ahead.
No, one more.
Sure.
I have a weather stick that's very old and seems very accurate. Do you believe in weather sticks?
What's a weather stick?
Tell me what it is.
It's actually a little stick. It's wood. And I nail it to the side, like a side of a column on a porch. It goes up when it's nice, and it goes down when the weather's going to turn.
Huh.
That's interesting.
Never heard of it.
I don't know. I don't ever remember a meteorology exam that had weather stick on it, but I've seen those things. Hey, listen,
so cool.
I don't dismiss anything like that because wood has been around a lot longer than people have in certain types of wood. Maybe they react to weather differently. It's just something I don't know really anything about.
Sally, thank you for that one. We appreciate the call. Weather stick. I never heard of that before.
I've seen them before, and they are like little thin. It maybe has to do with the density of the wood. I'm not going to pretend I know anything about it because
right.
I don't.
Let's go over to David in Virginia. David, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I have a question about climate change. Can you explain climate change from a scientific standpoint, why most scientists believe it's true, and then if you could explain what the argument is on the other side that don't believe in climate change.
All right, we only have about 8 minutes left, so you can do the Cliff Notes
version. It's
going
to be a really, really quick one. We could do a whole show on climate change.
Okay, we have.
So in essence, what happens is as weather warms up, as we talked about before, weather makes up climate. So even if you're talking about a 30-year period, you see warmer episodes, night times, warmer days, warmer nights, those kinds of things. And in essence, they all add up to what is a warmer climate. Now, there is a lot more to it than that when you're talking about sampling ice cores and all kinds of stuff. Why this has become a political issue, I have absolutely no idea. Politics and science should have nothing to do with
each
other.
I'm guessing money might have something to do with it.
You think?
Yeah,
and it's a lot.
All right. Let's go to Nancy in Spencer, Mass. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is kind of a crazy question, but over the last few years, I've noticed in the wintertime when what used to be called for centuries snow flurries have been changed to snow showers.
Personally,
I love snow, and I don't care for rain as much, and it just aggravates me. So maybe you can explain why that's happened.
Well, I love this.
Yeah, no, it, you know what? It, a lot of it has to do with just sort of the vernacular, yeah. Right? What people use to describe certain things. The difference between, and I'll answer this as quickly as I can, but in the context, you have like drizzle.
Right.
And you have rain showers. Now, you can have a heavy drizzle. It has to do with the size of the raindrop.
Okay.
Now, for snow showers against snow flurries, if you will, snow showers would be a little bit more of a coverage, if you will, in a certain area of snow.
Yeah.
And some snow showers can be really heavy. When you're talking about snow flurries, it's when you're walking down and maybe there's a breeze and you see a bunch of flakes flying by.
Yeah.
And there's just kind of in and out. So they are two very distinct things, and they should be identified as such in forecasts.
Well, thank you, Nancy. We appreciate it. And I know I've asked you this before. What's the difference between mostly sunny and fair skies?
Oh, boy. I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, I mean, fair, crazy.
It's all in the vernacular. Mostly sunny. You know, maybe three clouds, and fair might be two clouds.
Now you're just guessing. All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Tamara in Westfield. Tamara, you're on.
Hi, yes, I've been listening, and I've heard these wonderful scientific questions, and I'm questioning the validity of my question
no,
now.
No,
not at all.
We're thinking of retiring, and we've been in New England all our lives, and the question that always comes to mind for me is, where should we retire to? Weather has so much to do with that decision. Should we stay here? We're looking for a place that is no extreme of any kind. No tornadoes, no hurricanes, not too hot, not too cold, not, you know, is there a place in the country that's like that?
I hear San Diego's the place to be.
Honestly, yeah. Like Southern California is about it and close to the coast. The cribs out there are a little pricey, but and for that reason, because I love California. I visited. One of my best friends lives in Napa. I could never live there because I'd be bored out of my skull with the weather.
Yeah.
But also anywhere. I mean, you know, even where he lives in Napa, you know, it gets hot sometimes in the summer, but they don't. Their biggest issue, and it's not weather related directly, is fires.
Isn't that weather related? I mean, now California now, if they don't have a drought, they've got mudslides. If they don't have mudslides, they've got fires.
Right.
I mean, it's just unbelievable, the weather in California right now.
Yeah, and it has been. But overall, if you don't want to deal with tornadoes, hurricanes, extreme cold, or extreme hot, you got to go to California.
Yeah, you know, and I watch a lot of Mets baseball, and that's why I look like I'm 90 and I'm only, you know, in my early 50s. But Keith Hernandez and the other announcers, every time they're in San Diego, they say, oh, this is the place. The weather's always perfect.
I mean, it just is. You know, it's, you know, I suppose another, you know, or the Pacific Northwest, right? I mean, you've got, it doesn't rain nearly as much in Seattle as people think it does. And this time of year is awesome out there. Anywhere on the West Coast is generally going to be your safest place, although, you know, you get some big storms once in a while.
You get the earthquakes as well, right?
Yes, that's another thing.
When it drops in the ocean, you won't be so happy.
That's a good point.
All right, let's go back to the phones here, and we'll go over to Denise in Fishkill. Denise.
Hi. I had a really great experience not too long ago, and I was at a park where I saw a fog bow.
Oh, cool.
It was very cool. And it was, you know, I saw it and it was almost like I couldn't believe my eyes because, like, wait a minute, this is really weird. It was very early in the morning. And I saw this bow of clouds. And, you know, of course, went home, looked it up on the internet, and I was like, wow, that really exists. There's really something called a fog bow. Could you explain, you know, a little bit more about this type of occurrence, why it occurs, and how unique it is, because I feel like it was pretty unique, too.
Yeah, it is pretty unique. So, you know, any kind of a rainbow, or you've heard of sun dogs, things like that that you see up in the sky, which are sort of like a reverse rainbow, it's all a function of light hitting, in this case, water, in the, you know, because fog is made up of water, and unless it's freezing fog, which we don't get very often around here. But what you're talking about is light hitting these water droplets. Now, light, of course, you remember your Roy G. Biv, right? From the rainbow, the color of the spectrum. Yeah. So what happens is that light gets scattered when it hits it. It's a prism. It hits that water droplet, or actually several water droplets, and it just scatters it out, just like you would see a rainbow after a storm because the sun is behind you, or a sun dog where the sun is in front of you, but it's the same process.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, this was colorless, completely colorless. It was just, you know, a formation of clouds that was a distinct arc, you know, like, you know, arced like a rainbow, but completely colorless. It was the coolest thing.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you, Denise. We appreciate it. One time I saw, I think so, or maybe I hallucinated, it was a rainbow at night with the moon, and it was shades of gray. Is that possible?
A rainbow at night with the moon.
Right. It was the moon causing the rainbow. Yeah. It was shades of gray.
So it was a full moon. It had to be an awful lot of moonlight to come on through. And
did
then,
I imagine that, or did it really happen?
I don't know. It depends on how many martinis you had, I suppose. But I will tell you, though, I mean, if you have enough moisture in the atmosphere and you have enough light, you know, then it's obviously it's not, you're not going to be able to see it because it's darker surrounding it, but you still have an opportunity to at least see the distinction.
Yeah. Maybe I made the whole thing up. All right, very quickly, 30 seconds. Kathy in Royalston, Mass., you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I just have a quick comment that I was growing tired of people always complaining about the weather.
Yeah.
So I coined the phrase, it's all weather, you like it or not.
It's all weather, you like it or not.
That's a good point.
Well said, Kathy, and that's a good way to wrap up our calls here on the program. Jason Goff, always great to have you here. How do people find you on Facebook, my friend?
Just all one word, Goff Jason. Check it out, and hopefully I'll meet any of your forecasting needs there.
You know, I'll start pranking you. I'll say, you know, I'm going to Utah next week, and every day it'll be a different place, and you'll be scrambling to come up with things.
Bring it.
All right, man. Well, thanks a lot for being here. Jason Goff has been our guest. Support comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarriers and fabricators used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams, offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield, stavros.org for more information. And Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts, locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, and cocktails, live music every Friday, chestercommontable.com. Well, that's it for today's edition of Vox Pop. Thanks again to Jason Goff for being here today. Thank you for listening. Some terrific calls came in. You did it again. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. The phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Now, tomorrow, mark your calendars, radio fans, because Dr. Susan Ciculli will be in the studio on the next edition of Pets and Vets, which comes tomorrow at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for news.